Two. Okay. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Charity Charge Show. Like, it's been an interesting, obviously past 4, 5, 6 weeks here. And I've continued to try to bring on just really great guests from our community. And, many of them were welcoming in for the first time, to be guests as their leaders at their respective nonprofits. So without further ado, I want to introduce John Lair, who is the president and CEO at the Parkinson's Foundation. John, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Thank you so much, Stephen. I appreciate being on your podcast.
Well, no, we were kind of joking before we hit record, but this has been a long time coming. But I got to tell you that given your background, I'm really glad that we're doing it now. Obviously, everything that's happened given COVID-19 has force the nonprofit, you know, all industries, but, you know, the nonprofit industry in particular, our area of focus, to really have to adapt quickly and figure out how to navigate these challenges. And I know that you have a lot of experience. So I think it's going to be really impactful.
Great.
With that being said, do you mind just sharing? I mean, I could read off your biography and whatnot, but do you mind sharing with the audience? Obviously, now you're the president and CEO of Parkinson's Foundation, but can you talk a little bit about your earlier career and the things you did prior to arriving at Parkinson's Foundation?
Sure. Happy to do that. I went to school for and studied history, and I got a master's degree in history. And then I actually went into the Peace Corps because that's something that I'd always wanted to do. And then when I left the Peace Corps, I started working in research, database research. And then I gradually got into grant writing. And then from grant writing, got into fundraising. This was all in the Philadelphia area at the University of Pennsylvania and then Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And then eventually I started to do more high-level fundraising, and I was hired by the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, and then ran a large national campaign where we raised $175 million over a number of years to accelerate science in cystic fibrosis research. And that was really my first introduction to disease-specific research. Cystic fibrosis is a disease that affects a relatively small number of people, but it's a really tough disease. And so the work that we did raising that money led to some pretty significant breakthroughs and not only transformed cystic fibrosis as a disease, but really gave an opening to other disease-specific organizations about how they can address the basic underlying aspects of the disease and develop therapies. And so from there, I actually switched over from direct fundraising to management. I ran a Children's Cancer Foundation, then a Food Allergy Foundation, and then ultimately ended up at Parkinson's Foundation, where I've been for the last 3 years. And I very much enjoy working with patient-driven organizations. Parkinson's has truly been rewarding in that regard because I think there's a lot of need in the Parkinson's community, and there's a lot of opportunity for us as a foundation to address those needs. So it's been a great journey, my career, and I couldn't be happier where I am at the Parkinson's Foundation and working with such a great community of people.
You know, I'm so happy to hear it as you share that experience. I think one of the things that I get asked a lot, and this is by people that are in college or entering college rather, or coming out of college and thinking about their careers, I love your journey, you know, and how you, where you started and where you are now. I think that a lot of people aspire to, you know, be in a leadership role, but it's also important to reflect on where you started.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think if you had said to me to my younger self, you know, when I was working on my master's degree in history, that I would one day be, you know, running a national, in fact, kind of global organization for Parkinson's disease, I would not have known how I would have gotten from point A to point B, but it's been a great journey.
Do you think though, in that essence, and I'm curious, like, as people think about, just career growth and things of that sort, was it a mission and a calling to get into the leadership role? I mean, what were some of the things that I guess you found, like just interesting and motivating or inspiring to be in a leadership position?
Yeah, you know, I would say, I've had the benefit of being around all of my life, you know, from my grandfather forward, around people who've led large organizations and been successful at it. And so, you know, in the back of my mind, I mean, I don't think I ever started out thinking that that's what I would do, but I watched and learned a lot from people who were in leadership positions, and I saw what change you could bring about, you know, for the better. If you were in a position of responsibility. And so when I started out my career, I really made a very concerted effort to watch leaders and learn from them, things that they did well, things that they didn't do so well. You know, sometimes you learn more from watching people make mistakes than you do from watching them always be successful. I take the responsibility as the leader and the CEO of the Parkinson's Foundation very seriously because I make decisions that can affect how we fund certain things and not other things. And that's a pretty big responsibility. And I want to make sure I always get it right. And so because of that, I always think about the community first. I always think, what does the community need? What's the greatest benefit for the most number of people? And that really is my guidance.
I think I'm really glad that you share that perspective on it because, you know, what I think is really special, at Charity Charge, we're set up as a social enterprise. And I'm interacting with nonprofit leader after nonprofit leader. I'm obviously ballparking here, but, you know, 2 million or so nonprofits in the US, they all range in size. But their impact can be deep regardless of the size. I'm curious, you know, you're running a really large organization in terms of your reach, in terms of your revenue, in terms of your employees, in terms of your impact. I have my opinion, which I just kind of shared there, but what do you think are some of the common themes and things that the leader of a nonprofit that's $250,000 in revenue compared to a nonprofit that's $25 million in revenue, what do you think are some of the common themes that they need to have as a leader to be successful?
Yeah, you know, I think it's important for any organization, regardless of size, to be very clear about what their vision is. Almost every nonprofit I know has a vision statement, which is your big aspirational view on what your organization is trying to do. You know, in our case, it's ultimately trying to find a cure for Parkinson's disease so that people don't have to even think about Parkinson's disease. But we also know that's a big initiative and a big undertaking. And so in the meantime, we have our mission, which is to ensure that people are living well with Parkinson's, living their lives well with Parkinson's, which is a very difficult disease, but you know, that they're maintaining their health, that they're maintaining their quality of life, that they are, you know, working through what is a very difficult journey and having resources to make the best of it. I would say the other thing that, you know, so vision and mission, I think, are things that all nonprofits have in common. And then, you know, we have what we call our guiding principles. And I think most nonprofits should or do have their guiding principles. In our case, it's always putting people with Parkinson's first. In any decision we ever make, it's, does this ultimately help people with Parkinson's? And I think that's a very common theme among nonprofits, and certainly a question worth coming back to again and again, is what we're doing today with whatever resources we have advancing our mission and ultimately moving toward that vision that we have. And if you keep that front and center, keep that focus, it'll keep you from making maybe some missteps here and there or chasing the shiny object. Just always coming back to why are we doing this? What is it all about?
One of the big reasons why I love doing this podcast is it's an opportunity for me to just one-on-one learn. And then I hope, you know, as our community listens to this, they learn from our conversation. So to that point, I know you did just go through how you think about vision and mission, but I want to get a little bit more specific because I oftentimes still get confused, right? And even as the leader at Charity Charge, you know, I'm trying to do my best here. Can you just articulate a bit further, like what you think is the value of the difference of a vision and a mission?
Yeah, I mean, I think your vision is really, it's a broad view of what you want to accomplish, right? It's not necessarily your day-to-day, but it's what you, when you look out at the world, you think, you know, this is what I want to try and do. So for example, you know, if you're somebody that believes in free speech, you know, you want to make sure that everyone in the world, no matter where they are, has the ability to express themselves in whatever way they feel is right. That's a very big vision, right? And then not always easy, probably the hardest thing to attain is your vision, but you stay focused on it. And then your mission really drives you to, well, how do we go about doing that? You know, how do we ensure that, you know, if, you know, people being able, free assembly, free speech, those are the things that matter to people. And how do we make sure that, you know, we're, you know, the things that we do in our daily activities are building toward that ultimate vision. You know, is it just getting the word out? Is it funding conferences where people can talk about it? You know, all the different day in and day out activities that you do in your mission, but that are really geared toward your ultimate vision.
Do you ever, one of the things, I really appreciate that the differentiation of the two. I give a shout out to one of our cardholders and my cousin, Andrew Cohen. He had always explained it to me, and I love your, and I just wrote it out for vision. You wrote a broad view of what you want to accomplish. So you can stay focused, and mission is how you go about doing that. So I love your description of it. His to me always was vision was an ideal picture of the future, mm-hmm. and mission was how you spend your time.
Yeah, I think that's great.
But I mean, both are yeah, well done. But it's just I find the nuance in the articulation of these fine pieces of advice can make all the difference. And sometimes, you know, words have power. Yep. And they mean different things to different people. So explaining it different ways, it's helpful to me. And I hope to others that are listening to this, you know, I wasn't there. We're going to get into some more meat of this interview as well, but I do want to actually bring up a topic here where I think vision, mission, and your experience in the past of running organizations and merging nonprofits play in, because in light of COVID-19, what we're seeing nationally, but I can also speak to it more specifically or acutely, is in my community. We're based in Austin, Texas. The nonprofit community here, there was recently a survey that went out, and a high percent of nonprofits in the Austin community, we have about 7,000 in the Central Texas area here, reported that they do not have enough cash flow or cash on hand to survive beyond the next 90 days. And so a lot of these nonprofits were founded obviously with an incredible vision. They are run by people that are unbelievably passionate about that vision or that cause, but they're not gonna have enough cash to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really just trying to put some perspective. I'd love for you to talk about your experience in the past of organizations that you helped merge, and why did those organizations merge? And then we'll get to a broader question, which really is, you're aware of the pain going on in the nonprofit world, and I'm sharing this example mm-hmm. in Austin, but the kind of advice you'd have to leaders who have a vision, they have a mission, but there's no cash on hand, you know, should they think about merging? So yeah. that was a mouthful. I want to first start, I know you have a lot of experience at high level with organizations merging. Can you just comment on some of your experience there first?
Yeah, sure. You know, it's interesting in the nonprofit space, mergers are less frequent, except for like big healthcare systems. But, you know, I would say organizations like mine, Parkinson's Foundation, social service agencies, you know, smaller organizations. So merging, coming together is less frequent than you might expect. I understand why that's the case. I think people want to, in my view, do good in the world. They're well-intentioned. As you mentioned, they're passionate about a certain cause. And so, they want to lead in their own way, right? And, you know, those are, I think, are very human qualities. And so if you have a passion, you know, say like environmental causes or, you can imagine many different types, but like, you know, and you want to do your thing. So you start a nonprofit and you start working at it. And when the economy is doing well, you may have some success. You may, you know, even grow a little bit. And then, you know, sometimes in downturns, and unfortunately, you know, I think, you know, going back to the, you know, 2001 with 9/11, and then the, you know, Great Recession in 2008, and now with COVID-19, you know, there are these episodes, these events that take place, and they kind of knock everybody off their, you know, off their foundation. And so in those times, you have to sort of think about, you know, how can I respond to this and still maintain my mission when, you know, revenues are perhaps declining. So, you know, what I would advise, and what I do advise people is, look, if you've got a great nonprofit, but, you know, you're a little stretched for cash, look around in your space and see if there are others that you can, first and foremost, just partner with, collaborate, you know, share your mission, right? You don't even necessarily have to merge, but you could work on things together. You know, in our space, in Parkinson's Foundation, we have the largest Parkinson's Foundation is the Michael J. Fox Foundation, which a lot of people have heard of. We're the second largest, but we collaborate with Michael J. Fox on so many different things because it's better for us to just come together as collaborators and partners on programs and things like that. So we work on a lot of different things together without actually even formally merging. And then I do think there are circumstances and situations where it's important for maybe organizations to say, hey, look, I'm a CEO, you're the CEO, do we really need two CEOs? Maybe we can bring our two organizations together, get some efficiencies, then that will allow more money to be put toward the mission. And I encourage people to look at themselves, look at their organizations, and think about those thoughts. I've had the opportunity to be in two situations in my career where I've merged two organizations together, one in food allergy and then more recently in the Parkinson's, where we took the second and the third largest Parkinson's organizations and merged them into this, you know, really truly national organization. Circumstances were different, and food allergy was really two small organizations trying to get ahead of what was emerging as a, you know, an epidemic in food allergies and, you know, globally. In the latter case, it was really trying to better serve the Parkinson's community at grassroots level. And you had these two organizations kind of going head to head for years without really working closely together. And so, but in times like today, in COVID-19 times, you know, if you know some of your, you know, other organizations, let's call them your, you know, collaborative organizations out there, maybe it's time to say, hey, look, could we come together? If perhaps as a formal merger, but if not as a formal merger, just start to work together more closely, share resources, share programs and things like that. I think that's the spirit of the nonprofit space anyway. We take a very open attitude. Anybody that wants to talk to us about either collaboration or merging, we will always have that initial conversation. We never say no right up front because you never know where it will lead to. And it actually may end up leading to something really positive.
I'm really glad, you know, first off, that was awesome. Wow, you're one of our top guests. You're going to go down. But no, I really appreciate it where I came to you with a hard thought about mergers and you've tossed out this other possibility about partnerships, collaboration. And I think it's really important that, you know, people listening to this and just individuals out there running organizations that may be facing, certainly are facing economic challenges, or just thinking outside the box, bringing fresh perspective, you know, and maybe it's not something as dramatic as a quote merger.
Right. Yeah. There's so many opportunities to collaborate. Let's say four national organizations and many community-based organizations in the Parkinson space. And, you know, we try our best to work with all of them in one way or another. And, you know, some have said, hey, listen, I think it's time for us to come into your fold, or, you know, could we come together and work on things? And like I said, we're always open to that. There's no reason not to be open to that. And, you know, I will say, you know, we sometimes compete for donors for sure, but that doesn't preclude us from cooperating on so many other things.
Hmm. Do you, I'm just curious of like an organization your size, and give us a, again, this is, people think sometimes I put individuals on the spot, you know, nonprofit financials are public record. So do you mind giving us a size, a perspective on your revenue size?
Yeah. So, well, I'll put it in context. So when we merged the two organizations in 2016, we were roughly a $23 million organization. And today in 2020, we have grown significantly. So we'll be about a $38 million operation. Before COVID hit, we're having a record-breaking year, and I really thought we were going to be well above $40 million, but we've already seen the effects of COVID-19 on our revenue. So we'll probably end up the year at around $37 million. And then, to be frank, you know, I think we're looking at next year as maybe not being as large as we were this year. And so that forces us to make some tough decisions about, you know, what do we fund going forward? And it's also an opportunity to look at some ways we can be even more efficient.
That, well, you know, first off, thank you for sharing that with us. And I think that, you know, a couple of the next questions that I want to ask you are really just the realities of what anyone, and, you know, I have to do on my side as a CEO at Charity Charge, and you're doing as the CEO at Parkinson's Foundation, are, you know, make tough decisions sometimes, and also be able to forecast out. You know, our whole rallying cry of what we're doing here is focused on helping nonprofits improve financial stability, you know, certainly related to reducing personal risk for employees, improving cash flow, things of that sort. And my perspective, especially for what I see with a lot of smaller organizations, maybe it's the CEO or executive director's first go around at that nonprofit or running a nonprofit, they're focused 365 days a year, burning the candle at both ends on fundraising, fundraising, fundraising. But they're not focused on sometimes those practical things about cash flow, about financial stability, about reducing liability, risk, exposure, all of that. And I gather, given, you know, your experience and the level of revenue and employees, that that's probably a lot of what you're thinking about. So just curious, like, if you don't, it's a, again, long, I get long-winded here, but in light of COVID-19, what are some of the other things that you're thinking about or are top of mind in your role? You know, that might include like forecasting, cash sure. flow analysis.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that may not seem sexy, but like as the leader of an organization of your size, you know, you're responsible for?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, it's interesting, before COVID hit, as I mentioned, we were really on a pace to have just this blockbuster year. Just, you know, we've been on a pretty good ride here. So we were very much in growth mode, both programmatically and operationally, and most importantly, in our mission programs. We were really pushing the pushing many, many things forward, and it was a very exciting time. And then obviously COVID hit, and, you know, very quickly we saw the revenue just turn upside down. And so, as you say, you know, the first and most important thing any organization needs to think about is, well, really two things. One is preserving the mission, because it matters, and it matters to people not within the organization. In our case, it matters to people with Parkinson's. But then also preserving the organization itself and making sure that we are in the best position to weather this tough storm. So we took a number of, quick defensive measures. We did a cash flow analysis, as you say, where you just make sure that how much money do we need to have on hand to pay staff, make sure that the lights stay on. And we made a real commitment to, you know, to making sure that, so much of our mission is delivered by our staff, by our team, that we really wanted to make sure that that was first and foremost. And I reassured everybody that I said, you know, look, we are in a pretty good financial position. You know, we have no crystal ball, so we can't say what the future is going to be. What we can do is forecast for what we think is going to happen based on trend data. And that's the other part of what we've done is, you know, obviously we preserve cash, freed up as much cash to make sure that we could pay our bills and our team members. But then we also started doing forecasting and thinking, okay, based on the data that we have, you know, how long can we run at this level? How long can we run at that level? And we're based on an academic fiscal year. So we run through, you know, July 1 to June 30th. So we're coming up on the end of our fiscal year. So we're starting to think about budgeting for next year. And obviously, you know, we just have to think about, okay, well, we're probably going to see some decline in our operating revenue. So what does that mean in terms of our programs? And the one thing I've said to my team to the team at the Parkinson's Foundation is, okay, let's think about priorities. What are the number one priorities? And so my main mantra there is, you know, anything that delivers directly to people with Parkinson's has to be among our top priorities. If there's something secondary or tertiary to that, that's not to say that they're not important, but we are all about making sure that people with Parkinson's have the resources they need to live their lives as well as they can, you know, during COVID and then once COVID is over. So, you know, it's you take some defensive measures, you preserve your cash, you do some forecasting, you try to be as efficient as you possibly can. And then you hope that, you know, based on all of that, you know, that the crisis doesn't last that long, that you have to take, you know, some other tougher steps that, you know, people think about and know about, you know, but you have to plan for those too, right? You can't ignore those. You can't just say, oh, let's push that off because we're not quite there yet. So we've spun up a number of different contingencies where we've got a number of actions that we'll take, but we've timed them out and we've got some things that, you know, will signal to us that we need to make a different decision. Now it could turn around, you know, things could come back up and, you know, and already we've seen, you know, sort of the market go down to a certain level and come back up a bit. You know, that could happen again. So we'll just watch everything very closely.
I think it's well said, you know, and I think it's something that you're fortunate that you've got, you know, just candidly a lot of experience having. And I know that a lot of people are running organizations are struggling out there and kind of have been in this kind of panic mode. But I really appreciate that you share that just practical, pragmatic perspective. You know, what I'm curious to ask you too, as we kind of round out this interview is, you had brought up a bit, maybe, you know, earlier on in the interview, you had sort of compared this or at least referenced 9/11 in 2008. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you know, where were you in 2008 from a leadership perspective? You know, where were you working at the time and what comparisons could you make to this?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you kind of a funny story. So in 2008, you know, I was at the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation and we were, you know, just on a high. We had had three, four years of just tremendous success running this campaign to raise $175 million. We were doing really terrifically well. And we had every expectation that that was going to continue. And then we were sort of building programmatically. We were building for greater revenue. And then the world sort of fell apart. And I remember in the fall of 2008, really just when every day was like, you know, this organization just fallen, this bank has just collapsed. I was actually at a gala in New York City. And I was talking to the vice chairman of Goldman Sachs, who was on our board. And just a terrific, lovely, wonderful person. You know, his family had been deeply affected by cystic fibrosis, and he was an incredibly generous person. And at the time, I said to him, his name was John, I said, you know, John, you know, where do you think this is going? And he said, I have no idea. Right? And that really kind of made me think, wow, you know, here's this brilliant business mind, and you know, we're in tough days. But you know, there were a number of people, including him, on our board, who said, you know what, this will pass. These things do pass, right? And, you know, you just have to plan as best as you can. And then, you know, someday you'll emerge. And, you know, in 2008 and 2009, charitable organizations, there was a 4% decrease and then maybe a 4.5% decrease in 2008, 2009, which was tough, right? But then things started to slowly come back and, you know, organizations got back in gear. You know, this is an unusual situation. You know, this isn't your typical recession or depression. This is something completely different. And, you know, it's affecting the world in ways that we've not seen. But, you know, I think, you know, the best thing to do is do your planning, preserve your cash where you can, rely on your board who cares the most about you in terms of, you know, your financials, and, you know, lean on them to help you through the tough times so that when you get, you know, so that you can get through and get to the other side. So that's kind of the approach we took then, back in 2008, 2009, when I was at CF, and the approach we're taking today.
That, I'm really happy that you shared that. I might just replay that tonight as I'm falling asleep to just no, but I think it's really important that, you know, always we recognize the challenges that are in front of us, and we approach them head on, but also have perspective of, you know, an enduring positivity and optimism that, you know, we'll get through it. And I think that you and I are kindred spirits in the same way, that whenever I'm going through a challenging time, I just reference something that seemed so insurmountable, you know, months ago or years ago. And I go, you know what? I got through it. I'm going to get through this as well.
Yeah, so, that's true.
We shall persevere. And, you know, I think that actually is an appropriate way to wrap up, you know, this episode. John, I know, I want to make sure people know where to find you, and where, obviously, if they're moved, they can get involved. You want to mention where people can find Parkinson's Foundation and any other information you'd like to share?
Sure. Thank you for that. So our website is parkinson.org. So it's just Parkinson. There's no apostrophe, no S. Parkinson.org. That's our website. And then for anybody who has questions about Parkinson's or might be concerned about Parkinson's, we have a toll-free helpline. It's 800-4-PD-INFO. That's 4-PD as in Parkinson's disease, and then INFO. And we've got a terrific team of professionals that, you know, will answer the calls, and anything you want to talk about Parkinson's, they are there to talk to you and to listen and to answer your questions.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And big shout out to everyone. It's part of the Charity Charge community. Thank you for continuing to listen in. I hope that these and this series, as we've changed the format a bit in light of COVID-19, is helpful. Take care and talk soon.